Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is, quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Now and live.
We are guaranteed a new North American champion at NXT TakeOver 30 or XXX or whatever you're calling it, just so long as you don't Google it. Do not Google image search TakeOver XXX. I've made that mistake already today and I can't unsee what I saw.
Don't do it. I'm looking at it now. Don't do it.
Yeah, definitely don't do it.
Don't do it.
That's Adam Blompier, who is looking at unwanted porn. And
My work computer as well.
Yeah, well, what these computers have seen and what they haven't seen is up for
What's
debate.
What's that? Sorry. Anyway, yeah, don't do it.
It's like the turns out that the wrestling fandom is a lot like the Sonic the Hedgehog fandom and has drawn some very despicable things. Let's start with the main talking point of this episode is going to be the vacated North American Championship, which Keith Lee vacated at the top of the show. This was William Regal's big announcement for the episode, that Keith Lee opens the show saying he's won both belts, he's proved himself to be limitless, but he doesn't want to hold people back from the opportunities that he was afforded within NXT. So he has vacated the North American Championship in order to give other people a chance. And he's going to obviously keep the NXT Championship, the smart choice, the thinking man's championship. This has then set up the notion that for TakeOver 30, they're going to have a series of triple threat matches to decide who's going to take part in another North American title ladder match. And as you can no doubt remember, the North American title was initially, the first North American champion was crowned in a ladder match, which Adam Cole won, which I just think is like, it's a lovely bit of synergy. It's a nice callback to like one of the most successful matches, I think, in NXT history. That ladder match comes up so often.
Laurie, Jesus Christ.
Just picking words out of a hat, mate.
A little bit of brand merging.
Little bit of brand stuff. It's great. No, I think it's a nice callback. It's a nice bit of nostalgia for NXT fans. And actually, we were talking about who might take the belt, Keith Lee, and whether they do sort of a Becky two belt style thing. But very quickly, Keith Lee loses the North American title, which I don't think did much for Becky, frankly, when, you know, I think they barely got the t-shirt made that said Becky two belts. And then they were like, yeah, one belt, Becky now. So you have to buy another t-shirt again. So I think this actually is a bit more of an elegant solution to that issue of Keith Lee having to lose one of the belts to, you know, actually make TakeOver a sort of a card with more people on it. And this is a really good option for that. What do you think?
Yeah. Just to speak generally, I really liked this week's episode of NXT. NXT is always so good when it's building to a takeover and it knows when the takeover is and knows exactly how many weeks. We've covered this before, but I think maybe hyperbole, but I think a pretty flawless episode of NXT, which is not to say there haven't been better episodes of NXT. It's just actually, I don't think there was anything wrong really with this week's NXT. Like everything worked on it for me. And yeah, we obviously started with old Billy Riggs saying that there's going to be a ladder match. And the first person in that ladder match, really, really smart choice because, yeah, it really makes, like, suddenly NXT feels a lot deeper as a brand just with this kind of one announcement, really, and the first person in it. Because spoilers, first person in the ladder match is Bronson Reed, getting rid of Roderick Strong and Johnny Gargano, literally beating two former North American champions in a triple threat to basically establish that once again, yes, the North American champion is the mid-card title of NXT, and there is a mid-card division in NXT, which we, yeah, people were worried about when the belts were unified. It's just like, oh, does that mean it's going to be main event scene or nothing in NXT? No, they've done really, really smart play here and re-established their mid-card. Really, really good idea. And yeah, like, if we're not thinking about like, oh, is it going to be Johnny Gargano? Is it going to be blah, blah, blah? And so as a, like, if you're looking at just mid-card guys, there's so many cool options for North American champion, and it makes TakeOver such a rich card going in. And everyone loves the ladder match. So.
Yeah, so this is the thing. There's five slots available in the ladder match. Bronson Reed is the first one in, which means the next 4 weeks of NXT will probably have one triple threat each to decide the next contenders in that match before August 22nd, I think, is TakeOver 30. Yeah. TakeOver Triple X, don't Google it, whatever you do. Google it. And like already this week, we've been treated to, this was the standout match on this show. The Bronson Reed versus Johnny Gargano versus Roderick Strong was so well done. It was perfect booking, I think. And it's like, you know, they stack the deck against Reed really here by being like, he's in the ring with two former North American champions who both are heels, both decide very early on that beat the big boy is the name of the game. They spend so long working him over, and he does a lot of the sort of Keith Lee inspired spots of taking down the two smaller lads. Like there was a really cool bit where he's got Roddy up in a Samoan drop position, Johnny front, which knocks Roddy off. And then Johnny manages to clamber out of that and go to hit an enziguri. Reed just ducks and he hits Strong. As Strong stumbles back into the ropes, Johnny runs to the ropes and Reed just slaps him out of the air into Roderick Strong. That was like awesome. There was another like enziguri into an Olympic slam that Roddy did to Reed, and then Gargano chucks him out and goes for the pin. And that's where sort of the change happened in the match. This is when Strong and Gargano started to fall apart as their sort of tenuous alliance crumbled. I just thought they worked a brilliant, brilliant match. This was like, Bronson Reed is not a character in NXT that I've really been rooting for very much. He's had a couple of okay matches, but he's been trotted out to really just be the big boy. And the thick boy, and put over other people as well. You know, like he had the match with Karrion Kross, and that was really to make Karrion Kross look awesome. And I think achieved that. But this was all about Bronson Reed overcoming two other guys who are former champions to get his shot at this belt. And it really felt like he kept the pace with Gargano and Strong amazingly. Like there was a bit where they did he had Gargano up in an electric chair and Strong goes to dive off and sort of do a doomsday device. But at the same time, Johnny whips it back into the poison Rana, which hits Reed, and then as he's going for the pin, Roddy just runs in with his running knee strike and nails him and gets into the pin. And then Johnny, just as he's falling down, hits a super kick, knocking him off. And it's like, you can't see a moment in this match at any point where you think someone's actually just got a clear shot of winning. They were so all over each other all the times, and it avoided that thing that triple threats quite often do, where it's someone ends up on the outside for ages and that gives two guys the chance to just do their regular spots together. And then the next person comes in, there's a little bit of crossover. This was so built around all three guys working together for the majority of the match. I thought this was one of the best TV matches NXT has put on in forever. It's such a solid story. Good.
Really good dynamic. The dynamic fed into the story, especially with like Bronson Reed being the outsider in a number of different ways. Not only obviously a bigger guy, the only baby face, but also the only guy who's never held the North American Championship. So there was a real underdog narrative going in. And yeah, like you said, there was a lot of like kind of seamless spots. The only time really that you had the you know, the typical triple threat thing of one guy being on the outside the whole time was because it was leading into the finish, which was supposed to be the surprise kind of from out of nowhere. Johnny Gargano hits the final beat DDT, drapes an arm over, but suddenly death from above. Bronson Reed,
break your arm, Johnny, get it out of there, man.
No, I really thought Johnny had hurt his arm like real badly, because he drapes one arm over, but Bronson Reed lands on him and gets the pin on Roddy Strong.
And that all came after that power bomb to the outside.
Oh, that sick power bomb.
Bronson was on the apron, and Johnny's trying to get him into a power bomb position, and Roddy just runs in and hits this knee, which causes him to let go of the ropes, and they slam him to the floor unprotected. Bronson Reed went through hell in this match. They were just like, yep, and you're going to take a poison rana and you're going to get powerbombed to the outside. Do you want the North American title? You got to work for it, my friend. And I think he really, really earned his crust here. But if this is the quality of competition we're going to see building up to TakeOver, and we're getting like micro TakeOver quality matches here, I am all for this. I think this booking, I think it's a little bit cheap to vacate a belt. I don't, when there's not a really clear defined story reason, I think it's elegant in the fact that it means that Keith Lee doesn't have to lose building up to the NXT Championship match at TakeOver 30, which I think is going to be very important and defining for either Keith Lee, and I'm assuming Karrion Kross is going to be his opponent considering what happened on this show, but it's going to be career defining for one of the two here, and most likely both of them. And I don't think you really want to have Keith Lee lose on the way into that match. So this is a nice solution. It would be nicer if there was a reason, more of a reason behind it than just being like, I'm just being altruistic. I am pointlessly altruistic. I don't need this belt. There's too many belts now. But I think it gives everyone something, it gives everyone something to fight for. These triple threat matches are a really good way to, like you said, make the roster look deep, which they really do have a very deep roster and so many guys not appearing in matches. And you've got, in your first match, stack it so that it is Strong and Gargano and Reed, who is the outsider by all accounts, and to dispose of Gargano and Strong and say that that's their chance up, they're done. Next week, we're getting Timothy Thatcher, Finn Balor, and who's the other one? Dexter Lumis. So we're rinsing through guys who've been getting quite a lot of TV time recently, very, very quickly. So it just leaves it out to I'm sitting there thinking, who's going to be in these next three triple threat matches after that? Who else is on the roster? You've got Damian Priest. I assume he's going to be in one. Killian Dane will be in one.
Cameron Grimes. Yeehaw!
Cameron Grimes we're going to get, yeah. Maybe we'll get the different parts of Breezango split up. Who else is there? Dijakovic, but I feel like Dijakovic might be out for a bit because of what happened on this episode as well. I would assume that if he's going to appear, he's going to appear in the very last one. Are we going to get Adam Cole while I'm watching NXT? Is it going to be a surprise lead in for that final position in the final threat? I'm going to be like, leave it all up to suspicion who's going to be the final man. And then Adam Cole comes out and Adam Cole gets to, if we're talking about synergy and brands and stuff like that, Adam Cole won that first North American title ladder match. I think it would be quite poetic to have him come back for that, his final match in NXT, be sort of on par with the match that really defined the beginning of his career in NXT. So that'd be quite nice. Who would you like to see as your ideal field for the ladder match at TakeOver?
I mean, just want to say first off, good booking NXT this week. Booking both Dexter Lumis and Timothy Thatcher to go over and then be at the end of the show being just like, oh, by the way, you got those two lads and Finn Balor next week. It's just very nice. It just gives the whole show an element of it was all by design. You've got so many. I think Damian Priest should definitely be in the ladder match because I think he can definitely cause some carnage. I think Dominik Dijakovic would be nice. I feel like it might cheapen what happened at the end of the show if we see him again. I think he might, he should probably be done now, maybe.
It might be an elegant way to write him off TV if they're talking about moving. You know, he was meant to go up to Raw and SmackDown and apparently did, but then because they didn't, because of lockdown, they just went, he's back in NXT now. So, you know, there was all those rumors going around.
I would like to see Finn Balor. I think Finn Balor would be really, really great. And I wish he could compete because I think this would be a really good time to elevate Kyle O'Reilly. Like a really good time. I mean, Bobby Fish, I guess, could be one, but I'm just desperate for Kyle O'Reilly to kind of get something of a kind of a little bit of a single spotlight. I think Finn Balor should be in it. Yeah, just to kind of give it that one clear star who shouldn't get the belt, but is there to make everyone else feel more important. So who is that five? So yeah, Bronson Reed, maybe Santos Escobar would be fun just to kind of like try and do the double champ tease, and then maybe Drake Maverick can cost him, like come back and, you know, do some damage to finally get some comeuppance.
Yeah, that'd be quite elegant. I think they're building to a Santos swerve though, from the looks of it, if they're going to do a takeover match. That seems like a very nice option, or unless they're going to sort of get that out of the way quite quickly next week and then build to Maverick Escobar. But I still think that's too early to do Maverick Escobar. We need more time, more Drake ill-advised beatdowns, rushing into traffic, Drake Maverick ever.
Only Lorcan would be a nice shout.
Only Lorcan would be a really good shout. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they sort of fill this out, because I don't want them to get like, you know, into week five and we've already had Balor, we've already had Gargano, we've already had XYZ, and they're going to go, okay, well, now it's Denzel Desjardins and what's his face? Leon Ruff versus one big guy who's going to beat them very easily. Like, I wonder if Ciampa will come back for this. Ciampa, North American title, something he hasn't done. It's a good means to an end for him if they're sort of, they're at a bit of a loose end with Ciampa, it seems like. You know, he put up all that stuff we discussed last week where he was saying, you know, it seems like creative has nothing for you, and that's, you know, maybe a voice in his head saying that, and maybe that's a bit of the truth. Like, he definitely has kind of achieved most things in NXT that there are to achieve, but the North American Championship is not one of them. And you know, maybe if he can't have Goldie back, maybe he would settle for Crimson.
Well, ooh, like, I don't know. Should he be settling for anything less than Goldie? Like, Goldie's his one true love.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if he uses that as a stepping stone to be like, you know, maybe they could do a X Division championship style thing with the North American title where Ciampa says, look, I'll trade this in for a shot at the North American championship. I will relinquish this belt. I want to do loads of vacations in a row. I think that'd be quite nice. A novel kind of trick is like, I've gone through this hell to win this belt. I don't even want it. I just want a shot at that guy. If it's Karrion Kross holding the belt at the come take, that's even more relevant to that trade for Ciampa. Because I do think if Karrion Kross is the next NXT champion, then I think Ciampa beating him to win his belt back at WrestleMania takeover would be amazing. That is the story that I would tell.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you like wrestling? Do you like improv? Do you like role-playing games? And you'll love No Roles Barred, presented by the WrestleTalk Podcast Network. Six players come together to create a fictional wrestling promotion, roll dice, and create the kind of insanity that real companies can only dream of creating. Can Tony the Milkman survive the twilight of his career and still find time to care for his wrestling son? Can the Denimatrix overcome the vicious Apex and achieve total denimation? Can brothers Golden Joe and Silver Bro coexist as a tag team before they combust? Find out now with the wrestling show that everyone's talking about. No Roles Barred is available wherever you get your podcasts and only presented on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network.
Let's go through the rest of the show, though, because I think like there was so much to like about this week's NXT. That the continuing story around the North American Championship is just one part of what was a brilliant show. So it started with Keith Lee relinquishing the title. Then we got Dexter Lumis versus Killian Dane. I feel a little bit sorry for Killian Dane, who feels a little bit lost in this old roster recently. He came back with so much bluster and went into these big feuds with the likes of Dave Priest and was in the mix with Keith Lee and Dijak and Balor for a brief period. Like, there was a lot going on for him, and then he just sort of fell by the wayside, and it doesn't seem like they're very interested in him anymore because the new class kind of came in and they're doing more with them. But yeah, like, there was a couple of really big moments in there, like Lumis hitting his spine buster on Killian Dane, which just looked improbable. Lumis also hit a Swanton bomb, finally sort of getting a rise out of the crowd, Lumis, finally playing to the audience. And then to finish things off, Lumis locks in the head and arm choke and Dane passes out. So he still looks like a big strong boy because he didn't give up. He just fell asleep.
Yes.
It's an important differentiation. And obviously, Killian Dane also took his vest off to reveal the vest that he was wearing underneath at some point.
Looked like he was wearing a giant thong. Angles, but that's cool.
Yeah, he rocks it. Dane is so good. And it's, yeah, he does just, you know, this whole match felt very petty in the setup. Last week we were saying, you know, that this was all over a picture that was drawn by Dexter Lumis that didn't even really feature Dane quite prominently. I don't even remember. I couldn't, when I saw the picture, so like, I don't know why he'd be annoyed at that. Like, it kind of makes more sense if this was, you know, build as a precursor to buying your way into a triple threat match. Like, but it seems like it's the right choice to have Lumis go over here because, yes, Lumis is going to be in the big marquee match next week that we know about. We then got Roddy being interviewed backstage, and he said it was his time to get Undisputed Era back on track. Bronson Reed then interrupts and says, you know, Undisputed have already had all the opportunities in NXT, but this is his biggest opportunity. Johnny Gargano then interrupts, which scares Strong off, and he's like, yeah, I hate you too. He talks about... he says this whole thing ends with him and he's going to become the North American champion again, thick boy, and then walks off. And Reed just says that this is like his big opportunity. This was fine. This just showed you the guys who were going to be competing, set up a little bit of tension between them, showed that, you know, that it didn't really tease anything about Roddy and Gargano working together, sort of showed animosity. So maybe they didn't really pay off on that very well later in the show, but this was perfectly serviceable backstage shenanigans. I don't think anyone made a tit of themselves here. We then got a recap of Tegan Nox and Io Shirai from last week and Dakota Kai coming in at the end to boot Io in the face. And she says, when you get the taste of shoe out of your mouth or whatever she's saying, something about kicking. And then she says, why don't you come and find me? Oh, and make sure to bring your NXT Women's Championship, which is paid off later in the show because Io talks up Dakota on Twitter and it seems like they'll be having a confrontation later on. We then got Ever Rise, who only ever rise from backstage for squash matches, essentially, versus Breezango, who came out as Mounties.
They're the Mounties. I love that song so much. It's going to be in my head all day. Thanks, Breezango. Very Naked Gun, this. They just kept talking about beavers. Beth Phoenix was just like saying, so Breezango said that, oh, actually the beaver is a national symbol of Canada and that all beavers should be treated tenderly. And I just was, you know, it made me think fondly of good old dead Ledley Nielsen. Just like, he would have loved this.
He's legacy.
It's fine. It was good fun. That's the thing. Like, it's Ever Rise. No one cares. Like, if they get killed, you got to see the Mountie splash or the Mountie drop or whatever it's called. That was a lot of fun. It's nice to see Breezango. It's just nice to see them.
Yeah.
It's the least consequential bit of the show, but still fun.
Yeah. And it's, apparently Ever Rise are heels now. I don't think they were heels before. They were just, I don't think they had character before. So they got slightly more of this match than you would expect, and that enough of that match they put over the fact that they were sort of working heel here because they were getting right in the face. There was some cool stuff here. I liked the fact that one of the Ever Rise lads was shouting defense, defense on the apron and then just got supermodel kicked off. That was really good. There was a backdrop suplex that didn't work and Bree stumbles back into the corner, gets the hot tag, and this is where the whole thing sort of kicks off and Fandango does his comeback spot and then hits the Mountie dive. And then they're both in the ring and Breezango double suplex both members of Ever Rise and pick up the win. This was a fairly simple getting some heat back for Breezango after being involved with Legado del Fantasma last week and not coming out very well from that. Dijak then got interviewed backstage and he said that last week him and Karrion Kross brawled through those doors right there and then he suplexed me over the barricade and I banged my head on the floor. But this week I'm fresh and so I'm going to give him my elbows, my knees and my boots, head, shoulders, knees and toes, all of that stuff. This was fine. Fiery promo from Dijak setting up the main event for tonight's show, which was excellent, as you would imagine from two guys like those. We then got Io talking up against Dakota, and then we finally got some bloody payoff on Robert Stone and what he's been doing in NXT. So the match was made last week, obviously, Robert Stone and Aaliyah cost Shotzi Blackheart her match against Indy Hartwell, who has disappeared back into the NXT jumble sale of random talents they've signed. Stone comes out with a big boot on and is hanging around on the steps. Shotzi runs out and her tank hits the steps as she normally does, but that knocks Robert Stone off. So there's a bit of a tease of like the animosity between them there. A perfectly serviceable match ensues in which Shotzi is shouting, "Welcome to the ball pit," or the ball pen for most of it, as if she's
got so many things as Shotzi.
Got a lot of catchphrases.
You've got the wolf howl, you've got the tank, you've got the horn thing, you've got the green hair, you've got welcome to the ball pit. It's very much a sort of like, I mean, like, it's better to have too many things than not enough things.
But she was Who's Your Daddy before that as well. That was, you know, that was the last one. So welcome to the ball pit. I'm not, like, does she think she'd be watching a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something? It's like, it's a cop thing, isn't it? The ball pit. I don't know.
Or, it's a child thing. I know that. I know.
Oh yeah. Is she saying bull? Thing. Yeah. Is she saying bull as in like B-U-L-L as in like horned cow? That's quite dangerous. Or is she saying,
oh, I heard ball pit.
Yeah. Like the children's play area.
I don't know. Let's see what thing she comes out with next week.
Who knows?
Maybe she'll have a puppet. Who knows?
Welcome to the zip line. Who's your seesaw? Yeah, she's great, but she's got too many catchphrases for my taste. But she got, like, because it's Aaliyah, she got a really good showing here and she got to pull off all her normal stuff. She screamed in the face, welcome to the ball pit, knocked her down, hit the cannonball into the rope. She missed a wrecking ball and dives to the outside. Aaliyah then leaps off the apron with a sort of diving face buster thing. That was really cool. Shotzi hits her wicked switchblade kick at some point in the match and hits a big backdrop driver. That was really awesome. Aaliyah tried to roll her up in the corner. put her feet on the ropes, got caught out. That's when Stone then got up on the apron and got kicked off by Shotzi, ends up crying on the outside. And that's when Shotzi goes up and hits her huge senton to win the match. After the match, though, this is where things get interesting, because this felt like every other Robert Stone matchup until this point. It's like, isn't it funny how his leg hurts because he got run over in a vehicle by somebody? And then Shotzi decides that she's going to run over his other leg, his good leg, with the tank.
Total face.
Baby face move, man. Massive baby face move. It's great to see people who didn't ask for anything get their ankles shredded by a tank. But in the process of driving over his legs with the tank, she gets out and she's sort of screaming in his face, and he's asking Aaliyah to help him up. Martinez runs out and just kicks Shotzi in the face to knock her off, and then just walks off to the back. Like, so she's just decided to help out Robert Stone here. We then saw later in the episode, and we'll go over it now, they're backstage, kind of, I'm assuming, icing his ankle quite seriously, both of them. And Mercedes comes up to Robert Stone and says, look, I'm looking for someone who's going to handle all the rubbish stuff that I don't want to do, which is, you know, the booking of the matches and the talking to people and all of that kind of stuff. I want to do the bit that I'm good at, which is the fighting. Makes perfect sense. I mean, Robert Stone did manage to get Killian Dane that match against Dexter Lumis, so he has a proven track record of being able to book matches. This is it. Like, Robert Stone actually might be one of the better managers in NXT. I think he's also the only manager.
Yes.
Currently.
Well, NXT. I mean, like, you've got the Malcolm Bivens, but after the whole Indushare spoiling the double champion thing, I don't think you're gonna see Indushare for a little bit. I think they're in timeout. They did a boo boo. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that is preposterously dumb, isn't it? But we'll move on. So this I think this pays off really well. And I think they're going to do, I imagine they would do friction between Mercedes and Aaliyah, because Aaliyah quite liked being the only member of the Robert Stone brand. I imagine she's going to get booted out.
The biggest star in the Robert Stone
brand. Yeah, exactly. I imagine they'll kick her out quite quickly, and then Mercedes can kind of just be Robert Stone's only project. I think the pairing's really good as well. Like, I think Mercedes Martinez is great. I think giving her a manager sets her apart from Shayna Baszler as well. And I think the lazy comparisons that people will make, me, myself included, that does actually give her something else about her. And it does make her more of a prize fighter style character. I think this could be really fortuitous for both Mercedes and for Robert Stone. I think Aaliyah is going to come off worst in all of this, but it's nice to see it actually pay off. Like, it's nice to see. We've not been hot on the Robert Stone stuff. I don't really think it's been that funny. I actually just feel sorry for the guy, both the man behind the character and the character, most weeks. So it's nice to see Mercedes join, and I'm hoping that actually gives him purpose and starts to straighten out the edges of this character and make him a really serious mouthpiece for someone who is surely going to be one of the top stars of the women's division going forward, because she's so good. So I'm really excited for this.
I get kind of like original run Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar vibes from this, which I'm totally down for. Robert Stone has been a mostly comedic character, but the guy can really talk. And I think, it just makes sense from a kayfabe perspective, just like I just want to train and fight and hurt people, and you can handle, you know, the admin. I get that. I wish I had a Robert Stone to handle my admin. It's a really interesting pairing, not only because they are slightly different mix in personalities, but also I thought a really nice ultimatum that Mercedes Martinez delivered to Robert Stone, which is, I'll join the brand, but stay out of my matches, basically. Just like, don't overstep your boundaries.
I'll break your legs.
Yeah, exactly. Just be like, don't turn my matches into comedy Robert Stone matches, or I'll cripple you. I was just like, that's really fun. Because like, can Robert Stone resist getting involved in his clients' matches? I think that's a really interesting little push pull. Well, again, whilst Aaliyah is sort of like the younger child that is kind of like left out in the cold.
Look, to be fair, I we're saying all this is really positive and really good stuff, but it's probably leading to Robert Stone going to the end of his life. Like, probably going to be chucked into a landfill by Mercedes Martinez as the ultimate sacrifice. We're actually run over by a full-size Panzer. Like this we're going to get... This is probably just the setup to a more elaborate joke that NXT is going to do. Like, I'm not confident in this, but I hope that they turn Robert Stone and the brand itself semi-serious and really give it time to shine through. You know, what I'm hoping is a really big push for Mercedes Martinez. And I think that's the best way to do it. I don't think the best way to do it is just to carbon copy what they tried to do with Rhea Ripley and Robert Stone's interactions, which is, look, Rhea's beat up a boy and she's put him in the bin. Isn't she cool? I think it's actually nicer that, you know, that you can have an antagonistic relationship between Stone and Martinez, but it should be through success and it should be through, you know, her winning her matches and Robert Stone successfully setting up more matches for her, but they should have friction there because he's a bit of a goof. That's fine. I just don't want to see him put in any more bins because that joke has run its course.
Isn't it nice to be able to honestly feel, ooh, I wonder what Robert Stone will be up to next week.
I know. Yeah. Full body. Well, once Martinez is through him, a full body cast will be the next one, I assume. And we then got a little package about Isaiah Swerve Scott saying that he got into performing when he performed Billie Jean at school and everyone erupted. And that's when he decided all he wanted to do was perform. And he says that wrestling is like music because of flow,
harmony,
rhythm, and rhythm and other words. Beat. Yeah, this was fine. Like this seems to just, and he basically ends off the whole promo saying, Santos Escobar, I'm coming after you. I felt like this was more of a package that I was like, well, the North American title feels like somewhere with Swerve would be really well served. Especially when you've got a load of triple threat matches to decide who's going to be in the ladder match. So I feel like Swerve should at least be in one of those because he's bloody great. And the cruiserweights division feels a little bit like a step down for him, but fine. You know, he's going to be another step on the ladder for Drake Maverick to eventually topple Santos Escobar. You have to have good challenges for Escobar to make him look strong, especially if Maverick's, I think the current booking of Maverick hasn't made him look particularly like an underdog. It's made him look like an idiot. So it'd be worthwhile here to have Swerve put on a really good show with Escobar, maybe at TakeOver, maybe before, and then build up to Maverick finally. Yeah. And that full comeback story, which is its inevitable and logical conclusion. We then got the triple threat match between Bronson Reed, Johnny Gargano, and Roderick Strong, as we've already discussed. And after that, it was Timothy Thatcher versus Oli Lorcan, round two. Very similar to round one, round two, frankly. It was a lot of two guys stretching each other out and slapping each other's chests. I liked it.
Yeah.
It seems like NXT have caught on to some of the stuff you've been saying as well about the level of like variety they provide in terms of the shows they've been putting on, because Mara was really putting over NXT with a wild variety of styles in this during this match and saying like, you know, we've got something different every 10 minutes on NXT, essentially.
Mm. It really felt like that this week.
Yeah, I think it was a really well-booked show, and this was another brilliant little match that, you know, gave Timothy Thatcher a bit of heat going into his triple threat next week, made him a face to watch. You know, logical booking where if someone wins this week and they're in a big match next week, you're kind of going to sit there and go, okay, well, they're definitely, these are the things to watch out for in that bigger match next week. And these are the ways that they can then turn that on its head to confound your expectations and make you excited, like all good triple threat matches would do, because there's that extra element of someone else there to chuck around and to break stuff up and cleverly work your moves together. This was quite good. Lorcan had a lot of the upper hand for it, and he sort of ran Thatcher into the ring post and injured the left arm, and then spent most of the match working over the left arm. He got his own Fujiwara armbar at one point. Thatcher managed to get out of it by fish hooking Lorcan's mouth while sort of the referee couldn't quite see because he was behind. I thought that was quite clever. Like, it shows the sort of depths that Thatcher will sink to. He's obviously a fairly brutal character in that sense, and doesn't really regard the rules much. Lorcan then was still working over the arm, but Thatcher managed to get his shoulders down and picked up the win. And then that was basically all she wrote, Thatcher walks out of an injured arm. I imagine this is quite a good way, if they're going to continue to play up the injury, that gives them something to sort of hook into come the triple threat match next week. I hope they do follow up with that. I think it's a good way to, like, if you don't want Thatcher to win, to keep him looking strong as well, because he's been so well booked up until this point. Yeah, who do you think actually will win, Lee? Do you think Finn's going
to
win?
I think Finn's going to win just to have one person who is like a proper huge name, unless you get someone coming in to kind of like go into a feud with Finn Balor. Like Finn Balor, I think can only really lose if someone interferes. And I don't know who's waiting in the wings for Balor right now. I don't know if there necessarily is a good opponent for him. I think Dexter could maybe run into Killian Dane, or Thatcher can run into Lorcan. I think, you know, it's possible we may get a little bit of a schmozzy finish, but for me, Finn Balor makes sense as a kind of like, you want, like, just from the practical standpoint, when you are booking the match from an agenting perspective, you want at least one really solid ring general in the middle of everything. Who is like so versed and in loads of matches with loads of moving parts. Finn's been in a bunch of Money in the Bank ladder matches. I think the guy can hold stuff together. And yeah, like I said, I think his presence would elevate everyone. So I wouldn't be upset if Finn didn't win. Cause like I said, Dexter Lumis and Timothy Thatcher, like it's a mid card title and both those guys would do great stuff with it, especially Thatcher. Just like the idea of like, I can beat you in a million different ways. Try and take the title from me. But I think Finn Balor is probably the smartest choice just in terms of like takeover card and holding the match together and also elevating everyone else.
Yeah. I think Thatcher and Lumis have also had quite like, not clear stories, but they've had stories in NXT that are still developing. Like, you know, they've obviously swerved where Lumis's interests were going a couple of times because of various other factors. We won't necessarily go into here. Like, he still seems to have a defined sort of set of interests that have never really been about titles, seemingly. And then you've got Thatcher, who's been doing all the Thatch can stuff, and it seems more about hurting people. So I think his interests wouldn't lie with the title. And then you've got Finn, who has been at a complete loose end since the Walter match dropped off the face of the earth. So I think it is much better to put him into the ladder match for TakeOver, just because it gives him something to do that feels important. And you can lose a five-man ladder match by, you know, inches, and it doesn't feel like a huge personal defeat for Balor. It would still keep him looking strong. I think people will still be excited for the Walter match, which they clearly want to do at some point down the line. So yeah, I think putting him in this gives him a really big spot on a takeover card, but doesn't take up a singles match that could go to someone else. I think they've got a lot of guys floating around that are in need of singles matches from this, from the way this is kind of shaken out. You've got Johnny Gargano floating around with no match on the card. You've got Adam Cole potentially having his last match in NXT, if you know, all the rumors are to be believed. There's so many people who are going to need a little bit of a single showcase if they're not going to be in the ladder match. And I don't think Finn necessarily needs to have a singles match. I think he would work better in that ring general role. So from the Thatcher and Lorcan match, we saw Robert Stone backstage being annoyed by his ankle and signing Mercedes Martinez. We then got Finn talking about opportunities, saying that despite the fact that Keith Lee is too scared to defend his title, he doesn't need charity, but he will take advantage of the fact that he's not man enough to defend the title. And then sort of says that he's going to be facing Lumis and Thatcher next week. And he says, your push just hit the ceiling, to close, obviously.
What an insider term. Oh, yeah, I'm so excited.
This is it. He's working his own game. That's it. He's doing his own thing, cutting his own path through NXT, Adam. I still like the Finn Balor promos. I think the heel turn has been fantastic for him, and I just think I'm excited to see where he ends up. Like, he has obviously also talked up the North American title before as being within his realm of interest. Like, he, after the Walter thing went away, he did start sort of gunning for Keith Lee, but that was a bit of a swerve on the way somewhere else. So I can imagine them putting the title on him for sure. That I think him at the top of that division might be quite a good little thing to do before Walter eventually sort of gets back on the table at some point down the line. We then got the main event, which was Karrion Kross versus Dominik Dijakovic. And this was blooming awesome. So this was the whole point of this match was the fact that it was sort of this Dijak was the one taking Karrion Kross to his, not his limit, but he was testing Karrion Kross in a way that Kross has not been tested in NXT so far. Not even Ciampa got this much offense in against Karrion Kross. You know, quite early on in the match, Dijak goes to hit Feast Your Eyes and narrowly misses. He hits this big right arm off the back of that that knocks Kross out of the ring. There's this really cool moment where Kross like winds up for a punch on Dijak against the barricades and misses and just nails the barricade like it's
didn't
nothing.
Sell it as well, just like,
yeah, fine. Just walks off. Really cool. And then it's sort of all turned around because Dijak had him in the ring, whips him into the corner, runs in and gets blocked with the knees. He does this huge two-step head kick and then hits a DDT and then a Doomsday Saito. Dijak fights back a little bit, hits Time to Fly, does the sit-out chokeslam, gets a two. But, so then they end up fighting to the outside. And this was the brutal head-turning moment in this match, was they fight to the outside. And somehow Kross ends up sort of putting his foot on Dijak's neck. Outside by the ring steps, and he pushes his head behind the ring steps, and you imagine between the ring steps and the post, and then just walks back and just stomps it into his face.
Mm.
And Dijak is, as you can see, he's just lying there completely limp. The referee hops out and is like trying to check if he's okay. Dijak is we assume is weakly saying he's okay to carry on, and Kross goes back into the ring on the referee's demand. The ref's like, get back into the ring. And referee starts counting out Dijak. And Kross stands there for like a couple of seconds and goes, no, I don't want to count out victory. Goes out and gets Dijak, lumps him back into the ring, and then just full body mounts him and starts raining down these huge forearms onto his throat and onto his face. And the whole time Dijak's going, no, I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up. This causes Keith Lee to come out. And Keith Lee is like on the outside, like considering getting on the apron and getting into the ring. And Dijak rolls over to him after telling the referee, no, I'm not giving up. And he rolls over to Keith Lee and says, no, Keith, this is on me. Mm. I want this. Basically is what he's saying. You know, he just refuses to quit in this match. And Kross grabs him from like the head and hits him down, gives him this one big forearm really hard, and then picks him up and holds him sort of up to Keith Lee and says, are you watching? Look at him, Keith, and hits the and puts him in the Kross jacket and just holds it until the referee has to chuck the match out. This was so horrible to watch. This really, really gripping booking, and what an amazing finish to the match. It made Kross look like $1 million. It made Dijak look like really played up that relationship between Dijak and Keith Lee. Adds into the story that they're telling between Kross and Keith Lee really, really well as well. And the notion that like Kross is something that Keith Lee's never come up against in his run through NXT. You know, Keith Lee's stratospheric rise has been all about fist bumping Roman Reigns and pouncing people improbably over stuff. And even the matches against Dominik Dijakovic were even in the sense that like these are two guys who can match each other on every level. And Kross has just destroyed the guy who's got the closest to being on Keith Lee's level. He's absolutely murdered him. And now Keith Lee has to watch. It's so compelling. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff. And so, yeah, the match ends and Keith Lee rolls in the ring to sort of back Kross down. But Kross, like, steps back into the corner, doesn't leave the ring. He just stands and stares at Keith Lee, who's running down Jack. I just thought this was incredible. This was just amazing booking.
Yeah. If anyone has ever like seen any of my booking videos, or like especially the most recent one with Dean Ambrose, they will probably guess that this was everything to me. I loved it. Just like really melodramatic, Game of Thrones, cruel, like exacting, like no big stunts. I mean, obviously, like, you know, a couple of smoke and mirrors things with the ring steps, but other than that, just like, this is someone you care about. and I'm going to hurt him to get to you. It's so, it's exactly the kind of high emotional drama that I love in wrestling. And it's the sort of thing that Keith Lee sold perfectly. Dijak sold perfectly. Even Scarlett, like on the outside, was selling it so well. Like, yeah, it was just a perfect little angle to kind of build up to TakeOver Triple X. Don't Google it. Between Cross and Keith Lee. I cannot wait for that match. And if they find a way to build on, you know, making it personal like this and you kind of, yeah, carrying Cross doing something that is uniquely cruel, rather than just, you know, he doesn't just win a match, he doesn't just tap someone out, but he does something that is too far. And he does it on purpose, and he tries to hurt someone that Keith Lee cares about. It's just that, it's that exacting villainy, which exactly what he needs to kind of take him to that final level. And I think Keith's going to lose his belt at TakeOver 30. And I think we're entering into a long age of Karrion Kross. And I think this is a very well-told story so far. Really loving it.
I think it's really interesting to look at it in terms of what else WWE has done this week with villainy. Like, I think when you talk about exacting levels of violence and brutality and nothing too flashy, you have to look at what Cross has done, and then you have to look at like Seth Rollins this week. And Seth Rollins pops an eye out of Rey Mysterio's head, and it's all a bit goofy, and you can see the eye, and it's a bit of a prop. I'm going to have to bleep that. It's 46 minutes in. And you've got, and then you have him like gipping and throwing up after he's seen what he's done. And here, Cross crushes a man's head behind some steps and the ring post and just stands there being like, well, done that now. Best finish the match. Mm. Like, this is the way to do that. I love like, that violence and that purposefulness. Like, Seth Rollins went through quite a lot of effort to get himself basically into this match with Rey Mysterio, where it was going to be eye for an eye, and you know, spent a lot of time interfering with Rey, and then regretted his decision immediately when it actually, like, the things that he'd sort of planned for came to fruition. And here's Cross just being like, unplanned, unwhatever, I'm just going to kick your head in between two steel objects and we'll see what happens. Oh, but by the way, even though I've done that, I don't want to cheat victory and they declare me the winner. I want you to tap out still. So I'm going to bring you back into the ring and wait until you wake up enough for me to choke you. Like, it's so incredible that this booking of Karrion Kross, I just think, is one of their more remarkable runs that they've had. I think this is on par with a Aleister Black for me in terms of like stuff that NXT has done with people to elevate them into the championship picture. This does feel very like that sort of run that Aleister Black had through the roster, where it was just spectacle upon spectacle each time he came out. Everything that Cross has done so far, I just think has been wonderful. And I really, really can't wait to see him and Keith Lee have the match to take over Triple H. Please do not Google it. And finally, sort of, I don't know, I'm so intrigued to see which direction NXT wants to go here. I do feel like Cross is the obvious choice. And I agree with you that I think we're going to get a really long reign of Karrion Kross. But what would it do for Keith Lee if he's the one if he manages to retain over Kross? I think even that would be absolutely fantastic. There are so many good options. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see two of them just be the top of the roster for a long time, battling back and forth over the NXT championship, and Cross sinking to deeper and darker levels at all times to put one over Keith Lee to keep hold of the NXT championship. I do imagine, though, that Keith Lee's probably just going up. Like, he's got to be on the list. Yeah. He's got to be top of the list of people you want.
Want Keith Lee sooner rather than later for your show. He's the real deal. And then, like, you've got a perfect feud. Like, first feud back for Karrion as champion, Tommaso Ciampa. It's right there. Mm-hmm. Goldie is he wants Goldie to come home. Like, it's perfect. I don't get me wrong. Like, yeah, what it would do to Keith Lee, but he's been double champion. He's good enough. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for him to earn a lot of money on the main roster.
Oh yeah, and they love, and you know what, they love that transitional one evening that they have. They have one sort of Sunday afternoon, and then they appear on the next pay-per-view on WWE, or they appear on the Raw afterwards, and that loss is suddenly magically forgotten, and they're a brand new person, a clean slate they get. So yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens coming out of TakeOver XXX. Please don't Google it. Because I just think, like you said earlier, like right at the beginning of the podcast, we said like NXT on the road to a takeover is the best NXT TV you're going to get. And this week proved it, because it wasn't like, there were a couple of really standout moments. I think some of the other matches were perfectly serviceable matches in terms of like how they were booked and what they were booked to be. But because it was all building momentum, and it was also cleverly slotted in, you know, like Thatcher going over and Loomis going over to set up the thing with Finn next week, and you get a little bit of a promo from Finn, whoever we haven't seen for quite a while. All of that, all these little bits just make it feel so cohesive, and like we've got a real purpose and a real destination to build to. And, you know, like we've been complaining quite a bit on this that NXT has been a bit adrift from its long-term storytelling, and TakeOver in your house didn't really help, because that was so thrown together seemingly, like, you know, that the turnaround between the announcement and the show actually happening was a period of 3 or 2 weeks, something like that. And we've got a really nice defined 4 or 5 week period here where we're going to get really good NXT TV building up to some of the matches. I think I'm more excited for Keith Lee and Karrion Kross than I have been for pretty much any match in NXT in the last year and a half. Like, I'm so keen to see these guys have their match as the main event of a takeover. I really, really, really can't wait. If I had to put a number on this week's NXT, I think a very high 4 would probably be my overall rating. I think, I don't like to give 5 stars out, but this was as close to perfect as you could possibly imagine. How about you, Adam?
Yeah, like I said, like there have been NXTs with bigger moments and more memorable NXTs probably. But just when you talk about what we like about NXT in terms of like show consistency, or a whole show being booked and like booking with intent and booking with purpose and efficiency of booking being, you know, grounded yet effective, you know, kind of methodical yet emotional. It's a really good showing by NXT this week. I don't have a grade to give it, but I liked it very, very much.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as 4 wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
Do you have any big weekend plans, Adam Blompian?
All right, Mum. Just every time I phone home. Big weekend plans, no, not really. We are trying to get, so I've got a bike. Love my bike. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to get a pair of bikes for me and my partner so we can go on jaunts. But we found a mate who's got a spare bike. Apparently the brakes are a bit dodgy, so we're going to go and find the bike. Yeah, exactly. But that's it. That's my whole business. What about you, Laurie? Do you have any nice plans for the weekend? Are you eating?
I'm eating enough. I think I'm okay for money. I have one singular plan. I've got 2 plans for the weekend. I'm going to see some people in the park on Saturday for a birthday type thing.
Nice. Cans in the park?
Tins in the park, yeah. Tins in the sun. And then Sunday, the climbing center has reopened. Go on my boulders and lose all the skin on my fingers.
I was going to say, are you just going to immediately fall off the wall? How long has it been?
It's been, I've been a couple of times outside in the last few weeks, because when they said you could kind of go and do more exercise outside. We started going to a place called Erridge in Tunbridge Wells, which is like, just another like series of natural rocks and you can climb, but they're made of sandstone and they're awful and they're not very good when you haven't been climbing for like 3 months because sandstone ain't very grippy. Very, very silty. Comes away in your hand quite often. Not very good if you're not afraid of heights and stuff as well. So that was a bit sketchy. And then there's a place actually in like East London called Fairlop Waters that has man-made boulders. And they're basically like chicken wire mesh constructs with concrete poured over the top that are really good. And they're in like a really good location. They've got gravel beneath them, so not that dangerous if you fall off. But if you have a mat, it's even more safe. But concrete. Quite painful to hold on to, it turns out. And first time I went, I ripped all the skin on this finger. As you can see, that's healing up now. And then second time I went, I taped this one up being like, that'll sort me out. And then I ripped two other fingers.
Gross.
So yeah, I'm mildly concerned that like the main thing is, I think like tried to do as much like exercise training as possible to be like maintain some semblance of a shape in lockdown, but the thing I haven't been able to train very well is finger strength, which is very important for bouldering,
yes,
and gripping onto things, but also just finger toughness, because I didn't really know, like, unless you get like a bag of gravel and just do like Kill Bill style 1-inch punches into it to try and build up sort of like calluses on my hands.
The liquid chalk.
It helps. It doesn't really help with the sort of the ripping of the skin, because that's just like the chalk helps with it. It helps friction, but the whole thing with climbing is what you have to do is cultivate a series of calluses that toughen your skin up to prolonged periods of gripping stuff. Yeah, well, that would be defeat the object, isn't it? It's just one man, his skin and a rock is bouldering.
Oh my God.
That's what it's all about. So I'm very excited that it's opening up again on Sunday, but I imagine I will be terrible. So, maybe I'll give up on climbing if I'm bad at it, because that's the kind of guy I am. I like to be good at things. So we'll see how that goes. Now that I've complained about bouldering and talked about how excited I am to go back, I think that's probably enough podcast for everyone, because I've bored them all to death. So you have more stuff coming up from WrestleTalk this week. You've got AEW, which should be out around about the same time that this is out. You've got the Friday Magazine show this week, which is with you, Adam, and Hoost.
Guest Hoost is Alex, Queen of the Ring. She's back by popular demand. So yeah, we'll be recording that tonight, and that'll be airing tomorrow. And we're going to be discussing one of the bigger news topics of the week and then answering all your questions from the mailbags. If you do have questions, you've got until 5 p.m. UK time, which is when we're recording it, to get those mailbag questions into our Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleTalk.
That's good, because that's irrelevant, because this goes out at 7, so that is a wasted plug. Never mind. Forget it. You missed your chance. You weren't listening. You weren't paying attention. You'd have been looking at Twitter. But Saturday you're going to have SmackDown with Pete and Andy as well, and then we're back on the trail on Tuesday with Raw, etc., because there ain't no pay-per-views this week. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitor monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.